Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, coming to you with all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss for the next half hour or so. Logan, how are you, man?
I'm doing good, Parrish. You should be doing good coming off a vacation last week. I heard about a big trip up to St. Louis last week to watch the Cardinals play.
Man, it was great, and that's just vacation phase one. You know, you have all these renovation projects, you go through phases. Well, that's vacation phase one, and phase two and phase three are coming up after Media Days. We're going to talk a lot about Media Days in the program, folks. It starts Monday from the Winfrey, which I think, I don't know, it's changed hands, but they still have the Winfrey name on it there in Hoover, Alabama. Hey, folks, before we move on, I want to talk to you about some other podcasts to look for from the Daily Journal. Prep Rally, all things high school sports with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps. That's coming to you every Wednesday. Now, folks, these schedules are a little sketchy right now with vacations and summer just being a little bit slower and things like that. So I'm not sure you'll find an updated Prep Rally this week, but it will return soon. And the memo is there for you three times a week with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, all things news in Northeast Mississippi. And there is a lot of news going on right now. So news hasn't slowed down in the summer. So check out the memo, another production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. And vacation, I'm losing my mind here on the podcast. That's how slow things have gotten, Logan. I'm calling you Brad Locke. I'm saying Brad Locke so much during the podcast, but no, vacation was pretty good. Now, St. Louis, Kyle Alford and I saw a couple of games there, and before that, I was up in the Ozarks canoeing on the Buffalo River with some college friends, so it was pretty good. And I always find it interesting, Logan, that you know twice as much Major League Baseball as I do, but haven't been to a game. I was hoping that would change for you this summer.
Yeah, and there's still a possibility. I'm kind of weighing, I've got some vacation time coming up too, and I'm sort of weighing the idea of going down to Tampa to watch the, I know the Rays are horrible this year, but I've got some family down in Tampa, so that's a free place to stay anyway. So I could move over to St. Petersburg and catch a Rays game. And we've got a cousin that's a pretty big Rays fan. In fact, she did a photo shoot for Evan Longoria last night for his All-Star campaign. Shot at his house with his two kids, and he actually posted it to his Twitter account this morning. That was pretty neat there. But, yeah, you know, I'm still kind of weighing that idea. And I did go to the Biloxi Shuckers game a couple of weeks ago and caught up with Brandon Woodruff while I was down there, enjoyed a couple of days on the coast down there, and found a little bit of time to work in between talking to Woodruff, and had a pretty good story on that, I thought, and it was pretty neat just to be around baseball. You know, and I did go to the press box, and I wrote the story up there, but it was neat to sort of sit back and not have the pressures of you know, the everyday coverage that you and I have to go through for a few months, and you know, it's good to have a little bit of time off this summer.
It is a nice change of pace. Tell me about MGM Park. Is that what they call it?
It is, and I love the scene. You know, you have the Beau Rivage there in the background, and it's perfectly located right there. I don't know about parking, how great it was. I showed up at the ballpark very, very early. In fact, the Shuckers had just finished taking batting practice, and Woodruff had just finished up weights, I think. So I was at the ballpark pretty early, so I actually found they have a little lot right next to the ballpark. I think it was actually meant for players, but I kind of snuck my way in there too. But you know, I'm not sure how parking is for fans coming to the game. But you know, I love the backdrop and stuff. The press box, Parrish, is a lot like the one at Trustmark Park in Pearl. It's not great sight lines in the press box, and of course, there's not a whole lot of media that cover those teams anyway. But it's not. It's almost like after the fact they thought, oh, we got to find an area to put the press, and they just kind of opened up one of those boxes for them. Because you know, I couldn't. I was sitting on the second row of the press box, and I could not see home plate from where I was sitting. It's kind of it's the same way at Trustmark Park. You have to be in the right spot in the press box to be able to see the entire field. I know at Trustmark Park, you can't see left field, you can't see right field, you can't see home plate. You can kind of just see the pitcher's mound and straight up the middle. That's about all you can see there if you don't get on that first row. So,
well, it's a bit of a distraction covering baseball if you can't see home plate.
Right.
So, but that's kind of where those minor league parks are. Shifting gears, folks, so let's talk SEC Media Days. We know which players will be attending now. We'll hit that in a moment. Before we get there, I want to mention to you a special project we have going on around Media Days, and be sure to check out djournal.com every day during Media Days, actually beginning Sunday evening sometime on the evening before. We'll have a special page devoted to SEC Media Days, not just the Mississippi State and Ole Miss coverage, although that will be there extensively, but we'll have coverage of every coach and every team throughout the 4 days with a special web page that we'll be updating throughout each day there at djournal.com. So check us out on that special project around SEC Media Days. Let's look at who will be attending for Mississippi State and Ole Miss. That was released earlier this week. The Ole Miss 3, Logan, will be Chad Kelly, no surprise there, at quarterback. Then Evan Ingram, the tight end, also no surprise. A little bit of a surprise, though, with that number 3 pick and defensive lineman DJ Jones. And we'll talk about these guys in a minute. But who will Mississippi State be bringing?
Well, it's funny. I always try to pick the 3 guys that Mississippi State brings. And usually I'll get 2 out of 3, kind of like what you were just saying. But this year I got all 3. Richie Brown, senior linebacker, A.J. Jefferson, senior defensive end, and then senior wide receiver Fred Ross. And you know, AJ Jefferson was kind of the difference in there. You know, I knew he was a great talker and he would be wonderful at SEC Media Days, but he's kind of a wild card. You know, you get a guy that kind of speaks his mind from time to time. So, you know, he's going to be fun for us to talk to. I just didn't know if Mississippi State would bring him along. So, yeah, I do like the 3 picks that Mississippi State is bringing this year. I think all 3 of those guys are going to do well there.
Well, what do you think Dan Mullen looks for in deciding who to take to Media Days?
I think you try to find somebody that's engaging with the media, that enjoys being interviewed. You don't want somebody there that's sitting there sold up. But you don't want somebody that's just going to say something just right off the wall. I mean, you don't want to bring a guy like that. And, you know, there's guys like that on every team as well, but yeah, I think these are 3 safe picks. I mean, Fred Ross led the SEC in receptions last year. You know, Richie Brown is probably going to be a captain on this year's team. He's kind of the leader of that defense, and then A.J. Jefferson is a key part of that defense as well, kind of the veteran defensive lineman for Mississippi State, and I'm looking for him to have a breakout year. So I think they did a good job picking these 3 guys. I mean, obviously, you would think a lot more, you know, there's going to be a lot of questions about offense with Mississippi State breaking in a new quarterback this year. But you're only going to have Fred Ross to talk to on that regard. But, you know, there's a lot of question marks on the defensive side of the ball as well with 4 new defensive coaches. So you're going to get 2 players' perspectives on that. So I think they did a good job this year of bringing who I thought should be representing the team.
Well, I looked at the Ole Miss 3 here, and Chad Kelly is a safe pick. Evan Ingram is safe. These guys aren't going to say anything explosive. And not that people are looking for something explosive necessarily. Now, some guys, you got over 1,000 in attendance, you know, may go in there with some agenda. I mean, these guys are going to get NCAA tainted questions at some level, and they'll be asked different things. So maybe you have some media going in there with a preconceived idea of what they want to write, but that's not the majority. These guys are going to be very careful in what they say and how they respond, Chad Kelly and Evan Ingram, but they'll give good, thought-out answers to that. They are intelligent players in that regard, but if you start drifting too far away from the company line or the safe topics, and you're not going to get much out of these players. I think DJ Jones is an interesting pick here. Logan, there are lots of there's lots of talent returning for Ole Miss defensively, but there are some question marks and some losses as well. They believe defensive line will be one of their strengths, and they believe they're still pretty deep there, but a lot of that depth is young and inexperienced. So you lose Robert Kimdichie, you know, from that group, and there'll be a lot of questions about that, and a lot of questions about DJ Jones himself taking on a larger role. I mean, he was a pretty big role last year with 5.5 sacks, and he did some good things and was a productive player last year, but a bigger role, more attention on DJ Jones this year. Now, he's a little different from Ingram and Kelly in the sense that, you know what, he's going to tell you what he's thinking. And, you know, and he's not a man of very many words. And lots of times people will hear that and they will equate that with someone being unintelligent. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. You know, sometimes the best guys to interview are not the guys with an expanded vocabulary, not the guys with a lot of excess verbiage or anything like that. Sometimes it's just the guys who don't try to analyze your question, but just answer it from the heart. You know, they just listen to the question and give you the best answer that they can give you. And I think that's what folks will get from DJ Jones. And again, a lot of good storylines around that Ole Miss defensive line, which looks to be pretty good, but pretty good with different people and new stories and going through the year without Robert Kimdichie. So that's the Ole Miss three there at Media Days. And it'll be interesting, Logan, to see just where the topics go. Again, I know we touched on this a little bit the last time we produced a show. I just don't expect Hugh Freeze to get very many questions that are not NCAA related in some way. That investigation, of course, is still ongoing. It appears that the fact-finding part of that is complete. And so what we're waiting on is a date on the calendar. You know, at what point will there be a hearing for Ole Miss before the Committee on Infractions in Indianapolis? We'll wait and see on that. But that's kind of where that investigation is. It's just out there lingering. We talked about Phil Steele a little bit and kind of some, his magazine being out, some preseason projections. I know that he has Ole Miss right now third in the West, number 17 in his top 40. And in his one-paragraph assessment of the team, he talks about some talent lost, but an experienced player at quarterback in Chad Kelly, some talent returning. But then the wild card of the things going on off the field, the NCAA investigation, how might that affect this season? So he factored all that into putting the Rebels number 17 right now in his preseason top 40. I don't see that having a big effect, Logan, the off-the-field issues around Ole Miss, you know, unless there is a bomb that drops in the middle of the season that says the Rebels are not eligible for a bowl. I could really I could see that having an adverse effect. I don't think that's where this is headed, but that is certainly something that is out there on the table and something that could come down for Ole Miss from the NCAA when all this comes to a completion. But Phil Steele right now, he has the Rebels third in the West, 17 in his top 40, has Chad Kelly as his number two quarterback in the country. So that's pretty interesting there as well. And he also rates the Rebels' schedule, strength of schedule, number two. And it is a difficult schedule opening up with Florida State in a neutral site game in Orlando. And we'll talk about that in a minute as well. He has the Bulldogs last in the West. Logan, that's a talking point every year. And I know Dan Mullen's going to talk about that. They were last year. It's not usually where they finish. What do you think about State in the West right now?
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to get to. Dan Mullen, seems like every year he talks about how the media and everybody picks them last in the West. And only once in under his watch that they've actually finished last in the West, and that was his very first season in 2009. Mississippi State has exceeded expectations every year since then, and of course, that's the only season that Mississippi State didn't go to a bowl under Dan Mullen. So, and they were right there; they were probably 6 inches away in that LSU game that opening year of going to a bowl game at 6-6. But you know, it's not surprising to see Mississippi State down at the end. Like I said, it seems like every year they're picked last in the West, and it's probably the toughest division and the toughest conference in all of college football. And you know, Mississippi State lost a lot from last year. A lot of their playmakers, a lot of the known commodities for Mississippi State are gone. You know, Dak Prescott, Darunye Wilson. You look on the defensive side of the ball, you know, losing to Chris Jones and Will Redmond on that side of the ball. And you look at what they have coming in. They've got probably going to have a quarterback out there that's started. Well, there's no way, you know. Damian Williams is the only one that's actually started a game. He's only started one his whole career, so no more than one starting game experience.
And that was
career.
A big one, though.
Yeah, it was. It was. And he kind of just held things in check until Dak Prescott came off the bench in that last fourth quarter in that Egg Bowl to kind of spark the team a little bit and finally get that game over for us. And you know, we were approaching deadline that night, and you know, finally that game ended. I was expecting several overtimes if things didn't, end soon. You know, I didn't know if we were going to be able to get that one in the paper. I'm sure they probably would have held for that game, though.
Yeah, not a lot of scoring in that game.
Exactly, and Mississippi State's running game was atrocious last year. Just really never could get the running game going on a consistent basis. And, you know, they've got all the running backs back, but, you know, at the same time, none of those guys really produced last year. So, you know, a lot of unknowns for Mississippi State. Like I mentioned earlier, four new defensive coaches on that side of the ball. You know, going to have a completely different defensive philosophy this year, going mainly a 3-4 base. We'll have to kind of see if that works and see if that kind of comes to fruition. I don't know that they're actually going to go out of the 3-4 majority of the time. But based on what I saw in the spring, that's the defense they're going to run primarily. And, you know, I can't get Dan Mullen or anybody to go on the record and saying that that's what they're going to do. But certainly from what I saw that they're going out of that 3-4 base, running that Viper position at the outside linebacker / defensive end spot. So we'll have to see how that works. But, yeah, a lot of question marks from Mississippi State. I know, you know, they're going to have to go out and prove people wrong again, you know, and that's something that this team's very familiar with. I think the last 2 years ago, Mississippi State was picked last in the West, and, of course, they had that 5-week run at number one during that season. So, you know,
right.
they've exceeded expectations, and they're going to have to probably do it again this year.
So this Viper position in the 3-4, does that guy drop down at the line of scrimmage often and in essence make it a 4-3?
It could be. You know, he doesn't actually drop down, but he does line up there right there on the edge, kind of a stand-up defensive end. And some of the guys that they've got playing that position, like Will Coleman, he looks like he's going to be a starter at the Viper position. He was a defensive end last year. He's dropped a little bit of weight to be able to get out there and cover those slot receivers and stuff like that when that's deemed necessary. But, you know, he's kind of that athletic, tall, lanky guy out there on the edge. They've got some outside linebackers that are playing that position and some defensive ends like Anthony Mullins, too, that are playing that position. So it's kind of a mix between it's kind of a hybrid defensive end outside linebacker spot. So we'll have to see how they integrate that this season.
What do they like about the 3-4, Logan? Why is that a good fit?
Well, I can't get them to talk a whole lot about it, of why that's what they're running primarily now. I mean, it's like they're just shy. They don't want it out of the bag when it's out of the bag. I don't know why. I mean, I've talked to Peter Sermon, the new defensive coordinator, about this. I've talked to Dan Mullen several times about it, and they just keep shying away for it. They're just like, well, you know, we're going to be multiple. We're going to be multiple on defense. Well, you know, and that could be the case. But if you're multiple, why are you running primarily out of the 3-4? You know, I don't know why that's such a hard question to answer. And I guess they're just being coy about everything. But we'll have to see how much they use it this season. But you know, I know they worked a lot, probably 85 percent of their defense this spring was probably ran out of the 3-4.
Now, more defenses than not these days have that kind of viper position, some kind of hybrid position. I know Ole Miss in the 4-2-5, you know, lists only two linebackers in name. You know, they'll have a middle linebacker and an outside linebacker. But that Husky position, man, he could be a linebacker, he could be an end, and basically it's a defensive back, and it will be really important for Ole Miss that Tony Connor return to the level of play at that Husky position that he was before he suffered the torn meniscus against Alabama last year. And it, in effect, ended his season. He came back, got a few snaps in a little bit late in the year, but the knee was just not the same. Now, he's had the off-season work done on the knee, and you know, everything looks good there. And if he comes back at the level that he was playing before the injury, that will be a big lift for Ole Miss defensively. So anyway, shifting gears a little bit, Logan, when Mississippi State fans make it to Vaught-Hemingway Stadium for the Egg Bowl this season, it will be a very different-looking venue. That north end zone will be bowled in. Those expansion and the upgrades are almost complete. The grass surface is down. The practice fields are almost complete behind the stadium. I think August 18th is when Ole Miss will actually take possession of the facility from the contractors. But I'm interested to see the stadium myself. September 10th, the home opener against Wofford, 5 days after that Florida State game. But in addition to the bowling in of the north end zone, there will be an enhanced sound system, audio system that has been needed at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium for a long time, and then multiple video boards. You know, you'll still have the big board in the north end zone, and you'll have you know, two boards in the corners of the south end zone. And I think Alabama has done a good job of that. I've liked that at their stadium with the multiple video boards, and this will have you know, a little different effect of having several boards, but still having one that's very dominant and large, and I think the video experience will really be enhanced there at the stadium. And I'm interested to see what a bowled in Vaught-Hemingway looks like when all the work is done. The capacity will be 64,038. They really honed in on that 38. They like that the capacity ends at 38 because that's the Chucky Mullins number. And they also like that they become the largest stadium in the state again, Logan, until Mississippi State expands. And, you know, so that'll, you know, that'll come at some point. You know, they kind of go back and forth for that that honor there. What is State's current capacity at Davis-Wade?
It's right around that. I'm not sure exactly. It's 62, 63, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's very close. I mean, it's you know, it's close enough that that if State wants to add a few more seats and regain that title, it's well within reach. But I'm really interested to see the stadium with the video boards and the sound. Yeah, they did a little bit of this work last year. And they, quote, improved the press box, but actually made it a little bit worse, made it a little bit smaller, but that wasn't the issue. The big deal with that press box right now is Ole Miss, as you are aware, has this very long press box where seats run from about the 25 to the 25. And we used to have an entryway in the middle of that, and now we don't. So you like need to hail a cab, you know, if you're trying to get from the 50 out to where you can go behind the seats there in the press box. State's is different. I've always liked what State has there. What do you think, Logan? The seats run from about 30 to 30, and they go three levels high.
Right. Yeah, and it's actually four levels high, if I remember right. I think it's four levels.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's an older press box. It definitely needs a remodeling, and that's something that's going to be in the next phase of remodeling at Davis-Wade Stadium. The press box is going to be, you know, needs to be gutted and started over. I do like the setup at Mississippi State's press box. You know, it's not a bad seat anywhere you get in there, but, you know, it definitely needs, it's outdated. You know, it doesn't really have, you know, it still has, you know, the phone lines, and there's not a whole lot of Ethernet cords. I mean, Ethernet cords are probably scattered. There's one Ethernet cord for every probably 4 or 5 seats up there, and some of them don't work. Some of the outlets don't work. And, you know, it's just really outdated and just needs to be redone, and they're aware of that, and that's something they're going to do. While you were talking, I did look up Mississippi State's capacity is 61,337 is what it is. Now, they did have a record attendance of 62,945, so they got some standing room only people in for that game. That was that Auburn game when Mississippi State was number one a few years ago. But, you know, they found a way to pack 63,000 into that stadium, even though this capacity is only 61,000. So pretty, you know, they can always find room. If you're willing to pay money, they can always find room for you somewhere in there.
Well, I would imagine that Ole Miss will hit that new capacity of 64,038 probably a couple of times during the season, if not for the Wofford game on September 10th. I would certainly think that they would be able to pull that off against Alabama on September 17th. So difficult schedule for Ole Miss. You know, those three of the first four games, they have Florida State in a road/neutral game in Orlando, and then Alabama and Georgia at home on the 17th and 24th of September. So, you know, the Rebels return a lot of experience, but they've got a lot of guys who are going to have to feel their way around, too, and they're going to have to do that against some quality opponents in three of the first four games. Hey, folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Be sure to check out our other podcasts as well, The Memo with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, coming to you 3 times a week, and Prep Rally with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps. That's every Wednesday during the season, and we're with you every Thursday, schedules permitting, and schedules are a little more stable during the football season, so you can expect to find us with Double Coverage every Thursday. I'm Parrish Alford for Logan Lowry. That's it for this edition, folks. Thanks for being with us.